Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer could bring President Biden's social spending and climate bill to the floor as soon as the week of December 13th. Now, earlier this month, a $1.7 trillion bill passed by a vote of 220 to 213, mostly along party lines. There's a lot in it, but we're going to focus tonight on what it may mean for the Black community if it gets passed the Senate. Well, joining me tonight is Jessica Fulton, Vice President of Policy at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. We want to hear from you tonight as well. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We invite you to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Jessica, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Yeah, good evening, Harold. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this gets really down into the weeds for policy wonks. I need you to really kind of break this down, because there has been, in the news, for the most part, just a whole lot of back and forth and back and forth between Republicans, Democrats, and, of course, the president, as we were certainly fighting over infrastructure earlier this year, with not a whole lot of information coming out about what this may mean for America as a whole, and more specifically, Black Americans. So now that we are at the point of this social spending and climate package, what does this mean for Black people?
Yeah. So at the Joint Center, we've been paying really close attention to these debates, right? Because we know that Black folks are still hurting in response to the pandemic and the economic crisis, and that even before the crisis, we weren't all necessarily in a great economic position. And so, we've been paying really close attention. We know that the Black unemployment rate in October was at about 8%. So that means that 2 out of every 25 Black folks are looking for work and can't find anybody to hire them. We've already expired kind of the federal supplement to unemployment insurance. And so this was an opportunity to hopefully move forward a bill that's going to make some real investments in Black communities and some long-term investments in Black communities, even though I think we didn't get everything that we wanted. So the things that we've been thinking about that we think are really important, this bill is going to do a good bit for education. Not everything we want, but a good bit. So it's going to provide funding for HBCUs, increase the maximum Pell Grant, which is the grant for tuition for low-income students, by about $550. It's also going to provide a significant amount of funding for workforce development initiatives, kind of those short-term training programs that, when they're effective, are pretty good at getting people back to work. There are also a few things that I can't speak to in a lot of depth, but I think they're going to be a really big deal, like expanding access to childcare assistance for folks, universal pre-K, which is a huge deal, and expanding SNAP. So that's the program that used to be known as food stamps. It also increases funding for affordable housing. There is there's funding in there to make work pay for kind of the folks like home health aides, the people who do a lot of the work to care for our aging folks, and those who are disproportionately Black women, right? So I think there are a lot of important initiatives that we want to see pass, hopefully when the Senate takes this up in the next 2 weeks or so.
So let's that's a lot, and I do want to take a much deeper dive. But one of the things that did come out today, which I'm sure that you are certainly aware of, HBCU presidents sent a letter to the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, as well as sent a letter to the Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, demanding that the bill be passed when it finally reaches the Senate. And this is particularly important as it relates to some of the issues that you were already discussing as it relates to HBCU funding. And, you know, shameless plug, you know, for our, you know, the parent company, obviously Howard University President Dr. Wayne Frederick is just among the dozens of HBCU presidents who have signed this letter. But, and while this may on the surface certainly be symbolic, but also these, all of these HBCU presidents are very, very serious, is that this is about money, this is about support. What impact, if any, do you truly believe that these things could possibly have on these two leaders in the Senate?
Yeah, I think hearing from the HBCU presidents is going to be something that I believe will make a really big impact. The reality when it comes to funding for our colleges and universities is that a lot of our HBCUs are not funded at the levels that they need to be funded at for the amount of work that they're doing, right? So they're supporting a lot of Black students and kind of helping to build out the Black middle class. And I think I'm really excited. I think excited to see the HBCU presidents kind of get engaged and push on this, because I think without pushing on some of these things, you know, we have to fight for what we want, right? So that's going to make a big impact.
202-319-7810. We are talking about the president's Build Back Better social spending and climate bill. Of course, it could very well see a vote in the Senate within the next couple of weeks. $1.75 trillion, a lot of it on the line. Tonight we are discussing what it could very well mean for the Black community, particularly as it relates to Black communities, Black businesses, HBCUs, and the like. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I do certainly want your thoughts, Jessica, about the politics, because and all of that hanging over the head of this and just about anything that happens happening on Capitol Hill at the moment. There have been reports about, you know, Senator Schumer, the majority leader, talking to Joe Manchin. We haven't heard anything about Kristyn Sinema as of yet. But the truth of the matter is, as we saw with the infrastructure bill just a few weeks ago, that as Joe goes, so goes the Senate bill. And yes, there, you know, we do have an HBCU in West Virginia. But, and that's just one of the aspects of this second bill. But those things don't necessarily seem to move him right now. So what part do you believe politics may very well play as it relates to getting things done for the Black community?
Yeah, I think it's really disappointing, because I think we have right now an opportunity to make a really big dent in inequality, make a dent in poverty for Black communities and for communities nationwide. One of the things that Senator Manchin was opposing in the bill was the expansion of the child tax credit. And in particular, what that led to was expanding the extending the expansion of the child tax credit to just one additional year and our earned income tax credits to just one additional year, when what we really like to see is permanent expansion, because these credits are actually decreasing poverty significantly for Black folks and for everyone, really. So the child tax credit, and I'm going to try not to get too like in the policy details, but those are those monthly payments that parents have been receiving since the summer, right? So people have been getting kind of a few hundred dollars into their account. And the Build Back Better Act only extends them for another year because of the politics of what's going on the Hill right now. That's a provision that affects about 9.5 million Black children, right? Like, that's the kind of investments that we want to be making, that we want to be preserving. And our perspective is that this is an opportunity to reduce child poverty in this country and make those investments for the long term. There's also the earned income tax credit expansion. So that's an expansion that will allow low-income workers without children to finally claim a refundable tax credit. Right now, essentially, if you earn at certain levels, when you pay your taxes, you actually go into poverty by paying your taxes. And so, like, that's a fix that we just need to make. And one of the things that happened with the Build Back Better Act is we decided that we can only afford to make those changes for 1 year, which is absurd, right? So the people that's largely going to affect, that's cashiers, home health aides, like the people who have been kind of keeping our economy going and taking care of us, making sure that we're able to get done what we need to do. They're going to get a bump next year, but they'll only get it for a year, and that's insufficient. And at a moment where we have an opportunity to really make the decision that, you know, in America, in Black communities, we shouldn't be seeing poverty rates and unemployment levels that we're seeing, it's really frustrating that they're kind of holding up progress, right? And I have not heard a compelling reason for why we can't make these investments long term.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Build Back Better social spending and climate bill could hit the U.S. Senate next month. Gosh, December 1st, that's tomorrow. So, yeah, the Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promises that could be a Christmas gift for America. But certainly that is debatable considering the politics on Capitol Hill. What would Build Back Better mean for the Black community in this country? If you have a comment or a question, certainly give us a call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So one of the other questions or issues that I do have, because we often, and this is kind of a sore point with me, and we because we talk about the expanding SNAP, and we certainly mm-hmm. talk about what was formerly known as food stamps, and I think it bears saying that, yeah, for our urban centers, our cities, yes, people of color are the lion's share recipients of that, but broadly speaking, people of color are not the right. The biggest recipients of what would be considered food stamps in this country. There are still white people who get uh-huh. more of those kinds of social benefits. That notwithstanding, those things, to your point, it is still important for all Americans who are living at or just above or just below the poverty line.
Right. I definitely agree. I think that's exactly spot on. I think there's also a piece of this, and I think we'll have to see what passes, but the Biden-Harris administration has an executive order on racial equity. That means that a lot of the agencies are thinking about the programs that they run, right, from like the Small Business Administration, to like the Department of Treasury, to the Department of Labor. They're thinking about how their programs can be better equipped to achieve a goal of kind of equitable distribution, right, across programs. And so what that's going to mean is that whatever is passed through this legislation, if there's money that has to go out the door, those agencies are going to be charged with making sure that it reaches folks in the communities that need it most and that there aren't barriers to participating. So I'm particularly interested in seeing how that plays out, because I think that's something that's going to hit across the economic spectrum, right? Like there are investments in small businesses, there are investments, I mean, obviously higher education, there are investments in training programs and supply chains. And I think that's something that we all need to keep an eye on to make sure that that those investments get to where they need to go.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more of this conversation about Build Back Better and the Black community. If you have a comment or a question, what do you think? What would you like to see come out of this Build Back Better plan that the Biden administration is pushing? We could see a vote coming next month. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. As I said, we're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about the Build Back Better social spending and climate bill. Could hit the floor next month if Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has his way. Of course, we are talking about the $1.75 trillion bill. It was passed by the House earlier this month. Party line vote, of course. But now we come to the big part, as we've seen a lot of political infighting with the Democrats over this issue in the House. But now, is it an uphill battle in the Senate? My guest tonight is Jessica Fulton, Vice President of Policy at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. We're discussing what this could very well mean for Black businesses, for HBCUs, for Black people as a whole. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that we have seen, one of the promises that we have seen, Jessica, and I'm sure you're, you know, well aware, that a lot of people were looking forward to in some of the earlier discussions was free community college. That didn't happen, and of course that again got lost in the politics. You know, what is it that even as we have this discussion, and some people are probably thinking, well, yeah, we can talk about what this may mean for the African American community, but you know, I wasn't born in Missouri, but I did work there. And so some people are probably thinking, you got to show it to me because you can promise me anything. But the way the politics, again, are operating in this country right now, particularly when it just seems that, and I've said this on this program before, that the Democrats seem to be in some cases politically impotent on the Hill, that there's no guarantee that any of these things are going to happen.
Yeah, I think the free community college being cut was something that was very frustrating for our team, especially with the knowledge that, you know, making something tuition-free isn't the end-all, be-all. Like, it's not a silver bullet for making sure that people are able to get an education, but it does make a really big difference. And we know that community colleges just aren't funded at the same level as other schools. And so, you know, making it easy for folks to get a little bit of a leg up, or at least, you know, start to get that associate's degree so that they can start to really start earning more and being able to, you know, take care of themselves and their family, I think is really important. And it's really disappointing that we didn't get there, that didn't get included in the Build Back Better Act. I think.
No, please continue.
Yeah. The other piece that was pretty frustrating is that the House ended up needing to scale back this paid leave provision, right? It wasn't in there in the beginning, and then they put in a provision so that people could get 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave. So what that means is that people will be able to take time off, right, be able to take time off and still get some portion of their income while they're not working. And I know a lot of folks have seen all the data floating around about the United States being one of the only countries that doesn't allow mothers and fathers time off when they have a baby or adopt, right? But that also means that we don't have a time off if you have to take care of a family member with disabilities or an aging parent, right? And so what's happened is the House scaled back this 12 weeks of leave down to 4 weeks. The reason that's a problem for Black folks in particular is because we're less likely to be working in jobs that provide that paid leave, right? So a lot of folks don't actually have that benefit at work, but also because of all the data that we know about wealth in this country. And, you know, in order to take a 12 weeks off work, you need to have some money saved up, right? You need to have a cushion that gives you the space to do what you need to do. And they basically scaled that back to 4 weeks.
Allow me to play the devil's advocate here, because one of the biggest argument that we heard from Manchin, we heard from Sinema, and even from some Republicans who were more likely to support some of the earlier, you know, like infrastructure initiatives, even though these things may have been seen. Let's put the politics aside for a moment. Is that this stuff was just expensive, and there was a lot of concern for deficits, and we could talk all day about what happened in the previous administration and deficits. So, you know, I'll let you have that. Okay, I'll let you have because that's another show. I want to talk about the money. I want to talk about the green, not the red or the blue or the purple part of that.
Right.
But now, whether these things would be good for the country or not, we are where we are here. And what's the argument for? Is this just too much spending?
Yeah, I put the deficit argument in a bucket, right? Because we tend to pull those out when we feel like it's convenient to pull out, talk about the deficit. But I will say that what we cannot continue to do is to leave people behind as a country, right? So if we're saying that we can't afford to do this, right, even though we're making choices about what we're spending in other budgets, right? We have a very significant defense budget, for example. Like, these are policies that we know work to create opportunity for children. They work to close income gaps. These are investments that we know that over the long run will literally create a more competitive U.S. economy. We know that these are things that we need to like universal pre-K, that's something that makes a difference for decreasing crime in the long run, right? Like you end up with students who are more ready for the workforce when they graduate high school and college, right? You end up with an economy that is stronger and more cohesive. It's almost like we can't afford to not make these investments. And because what we've been doing so far, like, it hasn't been working. It hasn't been working for the majority of folks. And it certainly hasn't been working for the majority of Black folks. I get pretty frustrated about those because mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're spending money. We're just not spending it on the people who probably need the most investments right now.
One of the other things that we had previously discussed on this program, as a matter of fact, back in October, was, and this had to do with small business grants and HBCU initiatives in reference to business developments and the like, and some initiatives that would have helped HBCUs kind of develop programs. And this was within the infrastructure package. And I believe those things were also cut, which kind of goes back to what I was saying before, because we could talk about social programs, but even again, there are some programs that would help what people consider the engine of this country, which are small businesses. Mm-hmm. And is it for Black businesses? Because, mm-hmm. We have seen during the course of the pandemic, for example, Black businesses have been forced to grow, and we've seen even during some segments of the recession, the Great Recession, people have been forced to develop and to develop a sense of ingenuity to kind of pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. Are outside of the social programs, is there room for that kind of Black business growth within this package?
I think so at the Joint Center, we have been working on some polling of Black, Latino, and white-owned small businesses. And what we've been seeing really it's not new to people who, talk to folks every day, but it is really alarming to see the disparities in access to the kinds of funding and the kinds of services that can really help folks grow their businesses and really, make an investment in their communities. I think there are likely to be a few opportunities through investments in climate for people who are in particular industries, or through some of the investments in healthcare that may be helpful. I think largely what the folks that we're working with at the Joint Center are thinking about is how to make sure that those investments from the infrastructure bill actually make it to Black-owned businesses, to Black-owned contractors, right? So that people are able to get the contracts that they need that would allow them to, like, significantly grow their businesses. And I think there are opportunities. I would also kind of push that, I can't say what the data showed just yet, mm-hmm. but a few of the things that people really did say would make a difference in their small businesses is if they had access to, for example, paid leave or childcare, right? Because entrepreneurs are really trying to figure all that stuff out on their own, right? And just because you're an entrepreneur doesn't mean that you don't have kind of the same needs as everybody else when it comes to those things. And so I would say there are some pieces in here that would, yeah, absolutely technically be counted as kind of social spending, but they're kind of like the base, they're the base level of things that we all need to make sure that we can continue to go to work, right? That we can go get an education, that we can start a business. And so I think, you know, there's a little bit of it here, there's a little bit of it there, but we definitely have to keep an eye on the administration and, you know, push for them to pass this bill.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you talk about keeping an eye on the administration, I don't think the administration is the problem, but you tell me. It's not. I think it's right. It isn't. It, you know, the blueprint is here. The issue is in West Virginia, and the issue is in Arizona, and the issue is in Mississippi and in Texas and in Alabama and in some of the other states that do not support these kinds of initiatives brought forth by the administration, which surprisingly enough, outside, you know, when you move down from those Senate offices, when you talk about the people who I'm quite sure could use some of the help that these initiatives mm-hmm. are bringing forth. So it's definitely something to think about. I need to take a break, and I do want to throw this out to you for the other side, because we are talking in one of the other things about, you know, climate change. This is a rhetorical question, but I'd like to hear your thoughts about this. I know it's important. You know it's important. Outside of the, you know, the intellectual class in our community, do Black folks care about climate change? Because that's in this bill, too. I want to hear your thoughts about it on the other side. We'll talk about it in a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation with Jessica Fulton, Vice President of Policy at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. We're talking about the Build Back Better plan, President Biden's $1.75 trillion bill, of course, passed in the House earlier this month and could see a vote in the Senate next month. Before the break, I kind of threw out a rhetorical question about, we talked mostly about social spending, but one of the other things, this is also dealing with, you know, climate bill, you know, saving the environment and the like. And I just wanted to know, you know, your opinion about that, Jessica. And this is why, you know, I asked yesterday on the program, we were talking about saving money with financial guru Deborah Owens, and she made a really interesting comment as it relates to how people view their, you know, their finances and not looking at things singularly. She said, okay, if as people look at the high price of gas and they look at how they look at transportation and the like and buying cars, she said, you know, maybe people will begin to look at the purchase of hybrid or even electrical vehicles and not, you know, combustion vehicles. And, it just kind of, you know, occurred to me, we are seeing a move by, you know, many communities, those that can afford it, to buy these hybrid vehicles, to buy electric vehicles, to look into recycling, you know, and the like. But for the most part, when we are talking about some of the other issues that are in this bill, we're talking about keeping people above the poverty line, you know, some of these basic foundational things, is climate change too high a mark for those folks?
No, I really don't think so. And I think that is a really great point that a lot of the investments that we're going to have to make in the future, if we don't get a handle on climate change, like it's going to end up costing the folks who are probably least prepared to deal with it. But one of the things, the Joint Center did a survey in at the end of 2019. We worked on it in partnership with Third Way. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that if we ask people, we give them a list of issues the federal government could work on, and we ask, like, you know, how much would they benefit? Mm-hmm. Just about half, like 53% of folks said tackling climate change would benefit them a great deal. And we surveyed like 1,200 people, 1,200 Black folks. 63% said tackling climate change will benefit them a great deal. But that jumped to 66% when we said improving the safety of our water and air quality, right? So Black folks care about this. And we probably our policymakers aren't talking about this in the ways that people can receive it. Like, it is really important that we
that
sure
part, that, right? That part right yeah. there for the people in the back. You just said it. You know, they're not talking about it in the way that people can receive it. And then we can do another show on environmental racism and all of those other issues. But I think you hit on it. But please continue. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just saying that is obviously the way that people experience this day to day. Why not emphasize that point? When you're making the case for something like this, why not emphasize the point that this is going to make a difference in, like, the water coming out of your faucet in your house, right? Like, this is going to make a difference in the air that you breathe, in the air that your children breathe. And I think that really, you only get there if you have conversations with folks, right? You listen to how people talk about their experiences day to day. So I think, you know, I think we care about it. We talk about it differently.
And this is why I bring this up because, okay, the bill in its most colloquial term, it's a social spending and climate bill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we can go down into the weeds of this conversation when you talk about water, air, blah, blah, blah. Today, I'm wrestling with an issue with my parents about their water bill here in the District of Columbia. And I get a list of all of the things, all of the fees that they have to pay, and one of the things has to do with clean water and the Potomac and what have you. And I'm pulling my hair out because my parents, who are seniors, who are on, you know, relatively limited income, and they have to pay this amount, these huge fees to keep the Anacostia and by extension the Potomac clean, which, yeah, they want to do that. But this goes back to the question, because while they may not be impoverished, this is not high on their priority because they are seniors and they have other things to consider. And so then the question is, will this bill help them in addressing these issues, climate, clean water, blah, blah, blah? And then they see the fighting on the Hill and it all comes back. And what the heck are we doing? and then they're listening to the program and they will say, I most certainly hope that the Jessica Fultons of the world have a red cape with a big S on or a big I for intelligence, because they can break it down and explain it for the people in the back of the room because our politicians are not breaking it down the way that we need to.
Oh, God. Yeah. I am, you know, ever the optimist, hopeful that folks will start doing better. But I think, you know, we are working really hard at the Joint Center to kind of dig into this stuff and distill it and explain it, right? The test is, can you explain this to your parents? Can you explain this to your friends? If not, like, what are we doing out here?
I've got about 2 minutes or so. Your final thoughts. I want to go back to the HBCU piece. What is the danger if something like that between now and a final vote, if the HBCUs, for example, do not get what they're hoping to get out of this?
I think the thing that I'm worried about is more like, it would be bad if they didn't get the investments that they need to kind of continue to build up Black middle-class folks. One of the things I'm also worried about is that this is supposed to be a major investment in the things that we think we care about as a country. And everything that's left out of this, I'm really worried that it's going to be hard to get folks to make those investments moving forward. I'm just increasingly nervous that as people kind of give up on certain fights, we're not gonna see these major investments made, you know, could be for a decade, right, or more. And so I'm really looking forward to and hopeful about investments like the investments in HBCU staying in the bill when they vote on it or take it up in a couple weeks.
Well, we could hope. But we can do more than hope.
Yes.
We must stay certainly active. Jessica Fulton, Vice President of Policy at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. Thank you for letting me rack your brain on this really important issue. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, November 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.